Uber's profits may be more unter these days. That means under. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Uber is a private company not obligated to publish quarterly results with the detail of its stock market traded public cousins. But every 3 months, its investors do get a financial update. Bloomberg News is reporting leaked numbers today, suggesting Uber lost $800 million July through September, this even after making $1.7 billion off selling rides. Uber is clearly trying to play a long game, spending a fortune to consolidate in existing markets, expand into new markets, and paying subsidies for drivers. Meanwhile, in California, Uber is continuing its test of self-driving cars in San Francisco without a permit. The state's Department of Motor Vehicles has told Uber to stop. So did San Francisco's mayor. Now, California's attorney general is threatening an injunction. KQED's Sam Harnett reports on Uber's strategy there.
Many companies have a permit to test self-driving cars in California, among them Tesla, Honda, and Google. Uber says it doesn't need a permit because there's a person behind the wheel ready to take over. But Susan Shaheen, an engineering professor at UC Berkeley, says Uber's cars are just as self-driving as, say, Google's.
Many of the companies that are testing could make that same argument.
Uber is also testing cars in Pittsburgh, so why push it in California? Christopher Koopman, a researcher at George Mason University, says Uber has a bigger plan.
They're actually looking to push the legislature's hand in reforming the law writ large as it stands on autonomous vehicles.
He says the company wants to pave the way for widespread commercial use. Jordan Berry, law professor at the University of San Diego, says Uber's bet is that the regulator backlash won't matter in the long run.
Presumably, they're thinking that, you know, the risk is worth it.
Berry says this fits into Uber's business pattern, testing rules and waiting for regulators to react. In San Francisco, I'm Sam Harnett for Marketplace.
Checking the markets, the FTSE index in London and the DAX in Germany are nearly unchanged at this hour. Dow and NASDAQ futures are up in the 0.1% range, the S&P future up 0.2%. The dollar's up, with the euro below $1.04. Retail stores like their employees, ready and willing at any time. Retail workers have family obligations that are often upended if they don't know when they're working until the last minute. Well, New York's Attorney General is set to announce today that several famous names in shopping malls across America are joining the move away from what is called on-call scheduling. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams is watching this.
So on-call scheduling basically requires hourly employees to be on standby just in case they have to work, but they don't actually get paid if they find out even at the last minute that the store doesn't need them that day. That can throw off planning for childcare and the finances for workers. So now retailers including Disney, Pacific Sunwear, and Aeropostale say they're going to stop using that kind of scheduling. That change in policy comes in response to New York and seven other states probing the practice, with hints it may violate labor laws, which often require more notice of canceled shifts. Some workers in California even filed a lawsuit over the practice, which is still pending, and several other companies, including Victoria's Secret and Pier 1 Imports, have already given up on on-call scheduling in response to public pressure. New York says about 50,000 workers will benefit from this latest round of companies to join.
Kimberly Adams in Washington, thank you. Now, if politics is really about apportioning resources, that is to say, who gets the money, there's a lot of change coming this next year. Help us explain, explore, and elucidate these stories as only my crew here at Marketplace can. I'm here to ask you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift, in any amount, counts twice, thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. Help us keep it coming to you. It would be especially helpful to us if you donate at Marketplace.org by December 31st. Now to the business of education. This fall, the NAACP called for a moratorium on charter schools, pushing for more transparency and accountability for these. Charters are government-funded but privately run. Now charter schools could get a boost from the incoming presidential administration. Donald Trump's nominee for education secretary, Betsy DeVos, is a charter champion. From the education desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Amy Scott reports.
At a rally earlier this month near Grand Rapids, Michigan, Betsy DeVos echoed a familiar line in the Trump campaign, saying it was time to make education great again in this country.
This means expanding choices and options to give every child the opportunity for a quality education, regardless of their zip code or their family circumstances.
For DeVos, a big part of school choice is charter schools. She's spent decades and millions of dollars promoting their growth in her home state of Michigan, where about 80% of charter schools are operated by for-profit companies. That's compared to less than 13% nationally. Thomas Tock is an education policy expert at Georgetown University. He says if confirmed, DeVos could use her position to fuel their growth.
The federal government provides hundreds of millions of dollars a year for charter school expansion, and she could increase that spending.
But the results in Michigan have been disappointing, Tuck says. In Detroit, more than half of students attend charter schools. But compared to other big cities, Detroit ranks last on national reading and math tests. Last spring, DeVos fought legislation that would have increased oversight and prevented failing operators from opening new schools.
An unregulated market produces lots of both financial and educational failure in the charter sector.
Betsy DeVos's nomination has attracted criticism from many public school advocates.
She wants to outsource uncritically, unaccountably, public education.
Cornell Brooks is president of the NAACP, which earlier this year called for a moratorium on charter school expansion.
If you look at the record in Michigan, it's, as some people would put it in colloquial terms, a hot mess.
Dan Quisenberry is president of the Michigan Association of Public School Academies, which represents the 300 charter schools in the state. He says all of Michigan's public schools need to do better, and he rejects the idea that DeVos would be too soft on charter schools.
I totally expect, if she's confirmed, that she will hold all of us accountable, and she wouldn't hesitate to pick up the phone and say, Dan Quisenberry, you've got some work to do in Michigan with the charter schools there.
But the growing backlash against charter schools could limit their growth. Even in Massachusetts, with some of the most well-regarded charter schools in the country, voters recently rejected a ballot measure that would have significantly increased their numbers in the state. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, and Daniel Shin. Our engineer this week is Charlton Thorpe. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.